Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher Podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where your dreams can find a voice. Learning how to connect and work with people from different cultures has become an increasingly important skill to have in our globalized world. No matter where we live, chances are high that we'll interact with someone from a different country or state at some point in our life. To give us more insight into this subject, I invited Pellegrino Riccardi, a cross-cultural expert who has spent the past 30 years traveling around the world and interacting with countless different cultures, nationalities, and people types. Pellegrino is a keynote speaker who has excited and delighted audiences all over the world with a style of public speaking that brings together the ability to present complex ideas in a simple and accessible way, which is then wrapped up in storytelling and observational humor. In this interview, Pellegrino will offer his expert advice on how we can communicate effectively with people from different backgrounds and overcome some of the common barriers. He also talks about the importance of developing a global mindset. If you like what you heard, please don't forget to like, rate, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Thank you. Hello, Pellegrino. How are you doing today?
Hi there. I'm doing very well. Thanks very much. Good to be on your show, podcast. What should we call it?
Yeah, it's a show, podcast, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Well, so how are you doing out there in beautiful Norway? It must be so nice right now during the summer.
It's amazing, actually, if you get out there to actually see it. My last year has been spent here, basically, here. This is my office. This is my little place where I work, where I do my talks through my little camera and all my technological wizardry in front of me. So to be honest with you, I've been inside a lot the past year, not because I wanted to, but there's been nowhere to go for obvious reasons. And I was at my annual check at the doctor's the other day, and he said I had a vitamin D deficiency the first time in my life. That's sunlight, right? So I've got to get out more is the answer.
Well, it gets pretty dark out there in winter, right? I mean, anyway, the sun's hardly there. Yeah, yeah. Because I lived in Sweden for a few months, so I remember that.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking the time to be here to share your knowledge with us. You know, I'm also a third culture kid, and I've had the opportunity to interact with all kinds of people. And it's so nice to talk to someone who kind of understands the nuances of what that kind of life is like, because not a lot of people do.
Well, nuances and complexities as well, right? The cross-cultural aspect is really complex. We try to create patterns and models and try to explain it, but it's really, really complex.
I guess that's
what makes it interesting too. Yeah,
which is why I wanted to bring you on the show so that you can kind of deconstruct it for us. Okay, so Pellegrino, I'd like to open our conversation by asking about something that I read on your website. It says that you have the ability to connect with a wide spectrum of audiences, from baby boomers to Z generation, and from high-risk entrepreneurial enterprises to more conservative international organizations. So I'm curious to know, how did you develop the ability to connect with so many different kinds of people?
I'd love to be able to say to you, that's thanks to my postgraduate degree I did at Harvard Business School or Wharton Business School. But I'm going to be really honest with you. Do you know where I learned those skills? Hitchhiking. I don't know if you even know what hitchhiking is, because nobody does it anymore. But when I was younger, and sort of starting off in my career, I used to hitchhike all over Europe. And hitchhiking, basically, you know, you stick your thumb out and you wait for someone to pick you up. And then as soon as you get into the car or to the truck, your job is to connect with the driver. Because the more you connect with the driver and the more the driver feels comfortable with you, the further they're going to take you. Because they usually get in and ask where you're going and they say, yeah, I'm just going down the road. And what normally happened was if they liked you, they kept driving with you when they felt safe. Does that make sense? So you're trying to connect with these people. And I would be, you know, I'd jump into a Jaguar and be with a CEO of some company. And then I'd say goodbye to that ride and I'd get in a truck with a truck driver with little or no education, perhaps, who's got really, you know, polarized views and you're trying to connect with these people all the time. And without realizing it at the time, I did a few years of that. And I was really sort of tuning into people and sort of understanding who they were, how they saw the world, what belief systems they had. And it was quite fun. And another thing I did, because it got boring telling the same stories, I started making up stories. So I took on personalities, which was fun.
And
harmless, right? And it made the journey interesting. And the other thing I learned my connection with, actually, was playing music. I was a professional musician for many years.
Oh, were you? What kind of music?
30 years now. Well, it was techno rock music. We're talking about the 1990s. That's a long time ago. But I happened to do quite well with that and we actually ended up touring Europe with a band that's quite well known called U2, right? So playing these stadiums to people who didn't really want to see us. They wanted to see U2, right?
You were opening for them. You were the opening
act. We were opening for them, right? And you walk on stage and they're not there to see you at all. And you're connecting with them. You're trying to connect with them. And so it's these kind of things that really provided me with these kind of skills to connect with people. And then after that, of course, it's practice, practice, practice. I've been in the business for 30 years doing what I do. So eventually you become good, right? But I think especially today, it's really important to connect with different audiences and different clients, especially since companies have the different generations now, don't they? It's not unusual to have three different generations or even four within a company. So yeah, that was a kind of a long answer to your question.
Oh yeah. And you must have had like this innate curiosity in you, because you can't get into this if you're not genuinely curious about people.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember a particular hitchhike, a ride I had from this lorry driver. And he was borderline crazy and bigoted and not a very nice person. But even then, I was kind of trying to see, what is it that he sees and where does he get these belief systems from? I kind of had this curious attitude rather than just judgmental, if that makes any sense. You know, it doesn't mean I agreed with him. I was interested in understanding, where do you get these views from? How did you form this belief system in you? And I think that's where it all started, really. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If only people had the same attitude as you do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sure you're not there, but I'll tell the people who tune into you, everybody should go and watch a series on Apple called Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. You won't regret it. Trust me. Okay. Tune in, subscribe to Apple, watch Ted Lasso, because he has a number of belief systems and phrases. And one of them is be curious, not judgmental. It's brilliant. Mm. And Ted Lasso is a fantastic and really interesting series and funny as well and entertaining about emotional intelligence. It's about an American football coach who goes to the UK to be a coach of a soccer team. And he has no idea about soccer. It's brilliant. Ted Lasso, if you want to learn how to be curious.
Okay, great. Thank you for that recommendation. So let's start by talking about culture. Let's get down to the basics. So culture is defined in so many different ways. So how would you describe culture in your own words?
Well, you can do the easy one, which is the way we do things around here. So it's just a way we do things. Nobody really understands why. We kind of copy each other, and that's the way we do it. Another definition I use is this idea that it's a kind of system of behavior that's accepted and familiar. We tend to do things that we know are accepted by a group. Another way I describe it is to use the words accepted and familiar. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of system of behavior that's both accepted. I know that people will think it's okay, and it's familiar. They've seen it before. And then there's another one which is more complex and is really wordy, but it's the one that really captures culture. And I thought I'd show you on a slide actually behind you, if that's all right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
I can even.
Yeah. So look, I'm even going to show you the slide. So you don't even have to.
Well, you might need to, you might need to talk through them because there are some people who are just going to be listening to this and not watching it.
Yeah. So I'm going to show a slide. And for those who can't see what I'm showing here, I've got a definition. And culture is a complex pattern of ideas, emotions, and behaviors that are expected, reinforced, and rewarded by a group of people. And that's really wordy. But the most important thing is culture is ideas, emotions, and behaviors. It's what you think, what you feel, what you do. And how do you know how to think, feel, and do? Well, that is what your group expects from you, reinforces, and rewards. And we as human beings are constantly looking to do things we know we will get rewarded for. Human beings don't like doing things that they know they'll get sanctioned for. So culture ends up being this really powerful force, actually. It's a really powerful force that without you even realizing, gets you behaving in a way you know is accepted by your group and your peers, doing things that you know you'll be rewarded for, thinking things you know you'll be rewarded for. And an extreme example of cases, of course, culture becomes almost a kind of programming of the mind or brainwashing sometimes in extreme examples. It's quite a powerful force, actually. And we go around doing this without even thinking about it.
Right. Okay. And culture can be seen not just in countries, but you could see it anywhere, like in any group, right. Any entity.
It's not only cultures at all. People tend to say, you know, cultural understanding is a national thing. That's just one macro level of culture. Culture has, you know, thousands of levels, hundreds of levels. It could be on the tiniest group. The family has a culture. A family of three will have a culture, right? Up to a population of 1.4 billion will have a culture, which can then be subdivided into subcultures. It's extreme, you know, it's really complex. But what we're looking for are patterns of behaviors, patterns of beliefs, and patterns of feelings. Yeah.
Great. And I mean, with so many different kinds of cultures and subcultures, it's no wonder that there's so much misunderstanding and there are so many barriers between people when they're trying to communicate. Like cross-cultural communication can be a real challenge for people if they don't really try to understand people who are different from them. So with that being said, let's get into the barriers to cross-cultural communication. Can you tell us what some of the biggest ones are?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, the biggest barrier is your own brain, actually. The biggest barrier is your brain. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, the brain is your best friend because it keeps you alive, but your brain is also your worst enemy because it has, it's full of different biases. There are over 180 ways the brain actually fools you or tricks you into seeing or believing things that may not be seen by other people. So to keep it simple, I think the biggest barrier of the brain is that the brain is actually lazy. It's a really lazy organ, meaning the brain doesn't want to do anything that is not absolutely necessary to survive. And to work with other cultures when they are really different to yours requires you to have a non-lazy brain. You have to challenge your assumptions, your beliefs, your expectations. So that's a big barrier. Also, the brain is kind of is constantly kind of catastrophizing. It's looking for problems all the time. It's looking for risk. That's what the brain is designed to do. The best way to keep you alive is to look for all possible dangers. And usually something that's different is dangerous. So if you communicate in a way I don't see as familiar or accepted, you to the brain, that's dangerous, potentially threatening. So then it starts to catastrophize and goes into a negative spiral. And that's one of the reasons we have such polarized belief systems today in the world. And, you know, we talk of internet bubbles and we're being fed new, all that stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
The brain is a lazy, negative, biased organ. And that's the biggest challenge of working with other cultures. You've got to challenge yourself. You've got to look for positive intentions in other people.
It's interesting that you mentioned the internet being used as a vehicle for brainwashing. I recently did a project on cult cultures, like cults. And it seems that the youth of today are really, you know, they're being manipulated online. You know, they join
Not just the youth, not just the youth. All of us are, actually. It's not just the youth. All of us.
Right.
Every single one of us, right?
Yes.
We're being tracked, we're being followed, we're being fed the stuff we want to see, accepted and familiar. You see that? Accepted and familiar. And the more accepted and familiar you see, the more you hang out with people who think like you and have the same accepted and familiar.
Because it validates you in a way, right? It validates your identity.
Validates your identity. It makes your lazy brain feel good about itself, right?
Yes.
And you survive just fine as well. That's the thing. I'm fine. I don't need to be curious about others. I'm fine just the way I am, right? The problem is that with all the globalization and movement around and migration and global problems, we need to adopt the opposite attitude, which is we need to force ourselves to understand others because we need to work with them to solve the major problems of the world, which are nearly all global problems, not local problems. Yeah.
What would you say to those who feel a very strong sort of bond with their own country? They're really patriotic and, you know, they feel completely vested in the interests of their own country and they don't want to look beyond that. And I've met quite a few of those. I'm sure you have too. Yeah. How can they kind of get past that and, you know, get past that sort of, I guess what I'm trying to say is that how can they balance their national identity with that of a global identity?
Well, first of all, if you are a person who's proud of your country or nationalistic, to use that word, there's nothing wrong with you. That's the first thing. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that per se. At the same time, you recognize that that's your lazy, negative, biased brain working in your favor, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's just how we are. And it's the awareness and the consciousness to challenge your own belief systems. Why? Because a curious mind is a creative, innovative, problem-solving mind. What do I mean by that? A lot of people, we're always told to be curious, and we're often not explained why. And if I could just explain in a really simple way why. Every time we're genuinely curious, every time we approach problems and situations with curiosity, the brain is producing something called dopamine.
Mm.
And dopamine is a really, really important neurotransmitter. It's the what I call it the motivation hormone number one. It's not really a hormone, strictly speaking, but people understand that word, right? In other words, you need to produce dopamine in order to leave your cave and go out and solve problems. Go out and hunt. Go out and find things. Go out and have a lot. You need to produce dopamine to do that. And a lack of curiosity actually reduces your dopamine levels and makes you less creative and problem solving. You know, when I was first explained that by a psychologist, it kind of blew my mind, right? So in other words, you need to be curious to go out and be creative and solve problems. And ultimately to have a fulfilling life. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you have any tips for someone who anticipates that they're going to meet somebody from another country or from, you know, maybe even a different race? Because they, you know, races have their own cultures too. So if they're anticipating that maybe they're going to travel to another country or they're going to have a business meeting with somebody with a different background, what are some of the things that they should keep in mind to make sure?
Well, having traveled the world, traveled the world for 30 years myself, I've come to the conclusion that people want the same things around the world.
Okay.
Believe it or not, we all want jobs. We all want to be healthy. We want our kids to be healthy. We want to live long and happy lives, have good relationships with our family and friends. And, you know, generally when we're lying on our deathbeds and looking back on life, we want to think back and go, that was okay. That's what people want, all right? It doesn't matter where they come from.
Yes.
The big question is that we have different ideas on how to get to that point. So culture is the how part.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you do is when you meet other nationalities or cultures or even people who are different to you, to remind yourself they're basically after the same things as you. They're after the same things as you. They want security, safety, health, enough money to feed themselves and have a few small luxuries. That's it. And once you establish a commonality, then it's, you know, I always think, right, how is their way of getting that different to mine? Can I see the world from their point of view without necessarily agreeing with them? And once you do that, what happens is you can connect to a person. You can actually appreciate them, even like them. And when you like a person, it's much easier to work with them. It's really difficult to work with people you don't like. That's just common sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It can be done, but it's not easy. It's much easier to work with people you have an understanding for. Much easier, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would say to people. And by the way, I have to remind myself of that all the time. I remind myself of that all the time. It's a constant reminding, constant learning process.
Right, right. And I think it's also because, you know, subconsciously, sometimes we carry these biases, right? Like we hear someone with a certain kind of accent, or they have a certain kind of appearance or skin color or hair texture. We don't even know we're feeling that on a conscious level. It just might, you know, we might just experience that, and that can get in the way of our communication, right?
Well, it's not even might, we do. And this is something I wish people would talk about more in open. People are, in today's, you know, cancel culture, politically correct world, nobody's speaking up anymore. But listen, you know, the brain is designed to be fearful of difference. The brain is designed to be fearful of difference. If something's different, it's potentially dangerous. That's all brains all over the world. Then it's a question of, to what degree your brain is paranoid or cautious or whatever. You know, blacks can be just as racist as whites from a brain point of view. Yeah. The black brain, to use that term, and the white brain are designed in the same way. Now, I can't go into individual lives of individuals. They've all had their experiences, their life stories, and those life stories create different expectation levels. They create different fears, different cautions. You know, I can't go into individual stories, and I understand and I believe those stories absolutely. But brains around the world, all 8 billion of them, are designed to be fearful and cautious of anything that's different. That's how we're made. And I don't know why we're not talking about this more, because it's the talking and the awareness that breaks down the barrier. Once we accept that in each other, then we can address the problem. But while we kind of bury it and pretend that's not the way it works, we're not going to get anywhere with that debate, that discussion.
I agree with you. And I think this is, in the United States at least, this has really come to the forefront after the whole with the Black Lives Movement and everything, you know, it kind of bled into every aspect of the United States, the U.S. culture. And I'm sure, I believe it's also touched other parts of the world, the whole Black Lives Movement.
Well, here's the thing. Black Lives Movement, brilliant, very important, absolutely important, completely support it. But here's the thing, if you're working in an organization, one of the most important things, you know, to have in place in an organization, if you want people to thrive and be happy, is there has to be something called psychological safety. And psychological safety, the simple definition of that is a place where you feel you can be yourself, where you can be yourself and express yourself. As soon as you start to bury people's opinions because they're fearful of the consequences, you are damaging psychological safety. So what's happened today, I'm one of those. I've stopped commenting on social media. Why? Because I can't be bothered with the hassle, to be quite honest. And if I were in an organization, that means I'm number one person who's losing their psychological safety. So then I seek out other people who think like me, and then you create the bubbles. You with me? So you need to have much more open conversations where we listen to each other, respect each other, don't have to agree with you, but I need to try and understand you. That's a place of psychological safety. And with political correctness, cancel culture, all this, it's killing psychological safety. So I was asked recently by an American client, they wanted to vet every one of my slides in a presentation before I showed them to the company in case I had something that was offensive in my deck.
Wow. Yeah.
How would you react to that? What would you say to that? That's a tricky one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What would you do?
I'm not surprised with what's going on in the social climate right now that they asked to do that.
Right. So that says something about where they're coming from. And they even said they'd had an incident where someone showed slides that were offensive, and which is, you know, we don't want that either. But I said to them, listen, I'm not going to do that, actually. I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't think any of my slides will offend anybody because I'm careful and I'm mindful about what images I show and what stories I tell and what I say. And I, you know, and what you're asking me to do is just, I see it as a form of almost censorship. And I'm afraid I can't be party to that. So I'm not going to do that, I said. You're going to have to just trust me. And you know, there was this tension in the room. But at the same time, I know where they're coming from. They've had bad experiences. They're fearful that something could go wrong again. And, you know, it's terrible. And you end up in this environment where it's really difficult to be yourself. That's not good. That can't be good, in my opinion.
That must be frustrating, yeah. And they would, you would think they would trust someone like you, a cross-cultural expert who is, you would probably be one of the most sensitive persons, like when it comes to the
saying things that offend people.
Yeah.
And I may offend people, but it's not my intention to offend people.
Right.
Right? And that's another important aspect. I mean, the comedian Ricky Gervais says it really well. He says, just because you're offended by something I say doesn't make you right. I love that.
But Ricky Gervais,
you're offended, you have a right to be offended. That, you know, but that doesn't make you right. That just makes you offended. It doesn't make you right.
Yes.
And again, sometimes you have to ask, are you offended because you're really offended? Or, you know, is there an avenue you could explore where you could try to understand the other person's intent? Was the intention to offend you? Because I'll tell you what, most people don't wake up in the morning, look out the window and say, what a beautiful day it is today. Whose life can I screw up today? People don't do that, right? Or the ones that do, are they're ill, they're psychologically sick, all right? Most people don't do that. And I think we've forgotten this with people. Most people don't wake up and do that, you see.
Right.
You know, the kind of workshops and the training I do with cross-cultural collaboration has brought up all these other sandstorms of discussions, and they're really interesting to have with people. And it challenges people's minds, right? Because we're trying to challenge the lazy brain again.
Right. And I'm curious to know, Pellegrino, you mentioned that you've traveled all around the world. You've been to so many different countries, and you talked about some of the commonalities, what we all share in common, you know.
Yeah.
What were the differences? Did you find that you had to kind of navigate through these certain cultures differently than you normally do? I mean, do you have some examples that you can share?
Well, I've got the obvious examples. I think my personal biggest challenge, whenever I was in somewhere like Korea or Singapore or especially Vietnam, you know, I'm quite a talkative person. My Italian background, you know, I've got a lot of body language and raise
the
my
hands.
Voice and get quite excited in the hands. And I, this conversational overlap when I get going with people, it's just one. I kind of had to learn to, I'm covering my mouth now for people who can't see, but kind of cover my mouth and do a bit more listening, tone it down, slow it down. And of course, sometimes they would speed up as well, and then I would join in that. But initially, that kind of more listening mode of operation, if that makes sense. That's a classic one for me. I find that, you know, if you just sit back and listen and watch your environment, you can pick up some really big clues on how people interact and just copy them. You know, when you go to a wedding reception or a birthday party where everyone's dressed nicely and you're kind of subconsciously looking around, looking at people and copying their movements and their behavior and their tone, and because you want to blend in, right? So that's all. You just stop for a bit and try to become mindful of your environment. That's just the general rule. And again, be curious about your environment. Rather than saying, oh God, what's he or she doing? You say, oh, interesting. Look at what he or she is doing. That's weird. That's strange. That's interesting. I wonder if I could find out why. That's it, really. I mean, you know, people often ask me these kind of rules of do's and don'ts. Do's and don'ts aren't that useful. I don't find them very useful. Attitudes are much more important. The attitude of genuine curiosity. Hmm.
And is that something that can be cultivated, that curiosity, that willingness to stay open? Because some people, they've been raised in families or in cultures where they've been taught to follow the rules, you know, and to not interact with certain kinds of people. For someone like that, like, what are some of the things that they can do to overcome that kind of thought process?
Well, I'm often asked to be mentor but you know, I get these sort of business school, either ask me to mentor their projects or be a mentor for them. And they ask the same question, you know, what can I do to develop myself? And I say the same to all of them. I say, book yourself a trip abroad. Go and get a job in another country.
That's
just
great.
Do it.
Yeah.
1 year. Two, if you can, go away. Doesn't matter what job you do. Don't think about money. Just go away and be brave. Jump into the deep end. And the ones that do that all come back. And they're so thankful. They say, that's the best thing I ever did. Why? Because it forces you to see the world from others' perspective. And it's tough to begin with. It's no honeymoon. Yeah. It's really tough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But especially if you go to a non-English speaking country. I mean, assuming you're a native English speaker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, well, I remember my first trip abroad. It's a long time ago now. And it wasn't even that far. I went from the UK, where I was raised, and I went to Spain. Which is not far at all. But in those days, you know, I did it by train. And this, we're talking 1985. But I arrived in this little village and not a single person spoke English. Nobody. Nobody.
How did you manage?
I've got to learn. And I was there to learn Spanish as well. And I said, I've got to learn Spanish and I've got to do it fast. Nobody spoke English. They had one English teacher and that English teacher was terrible. I mean, just really bad teacher. And you know what? It was really tough. You know, I had a crying at night. I want to go home. What am I doing here? But then, you know, after a couple of months, it was really cool. And after a year there, I did not want to go home. But I went home and I'd grown up so much. All my parents, my family said, well, what happened to you? They couldn't explain it, but something had happened to me. Yeah? My mind had just expanded because you're seeing the world through other people's eyes and learning the way they do that. So my advice to anyone is get your ass off the chair and go abroad. Now, I'm doing this in COVID times, of course.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Once it's all over, do it. And if you can't go abroad, just change job, change environment. Go and do something really different and enjoy the discomfort. It makes you more resilient as well. You need to enjoy the discomfort. It's a bit like training. Yeah. You have to enjoy the discomfort.
And the lazy brain does not like that.
And of course, when you do that, you're again challenging the lazy brain. It forces you to challenge your lazy brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice, Pellegrino. And how would you describe a global mindset? And why do you think it's important to have one in today's world?
Well, I think I've covered most points, really, what I've been talking about. That, in my opinion, is a global mindset. So it's the curious mindset, non-judgmental. Yeah. It's the challenging the lazy brain mindset. It's the willingness to see others' points of views. There's a word we overuse and we've forgotten the meaning of. The word is respect. I use that in my talks. Respect is a beautiful word. But people don't, if you ask people where the word comes from, most people don't know. And it comes from Latin and it's re, which is again, and spect, which means to look. So respecting someone is looking again at them from a new perspective. You're trying to understand them by looking at them again. Respect doesn't mean agree. People think it means to agree with someone. You know, I respect you. Doesn't mean agree. It just means I've been willing to look at you from a new perspective to gain a new understanding. I can still disagree with you, but at least I get where you're from. And that is really important. That's a global mindset as well. And the global mindset also appreciates that while we live in our little environments of accepted and familiar, there are other ways of doing things. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's different. They're trying to reach the same life goals as most people on the planet, which is good health, education, enough money to have a comfortable life with a few luxuries here and there. We're all after the same things. And I think in today's world, we're forgetting those commonalities. That's one of the good things of COVID. It kind of reminded us that we are the same race, right? Because COVID didn't really discriminate, not really. We talk about, oh yeah, it hit the old and the weak, but not really. All age groups were affected. And it was pretty random whether you got it or not. And you know, as far as COVID is concerned, it doesn't discriminate. It goes for all of us. Yeah. And if that's not a reminder that we're all a common race, I don't know what is, you know.
I know. I think that's one good thing that's come from the pandemic. I mean, one good thing that it's kind of brought us together in pooling in efforts to deal with this horrible phenomenon that just happened to all of us, the whole human race.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and again, the way we dealt with, I've put this slide up for those who can't see who are listening. Just I put a picture behind me and it says culture helps you draw the line. So it was interesting to see how the pandemic was handled by different nationalities. They had their different ideas on what the best way to handle the pandemic was, right? All culture does is it draws the line in different places. You know, and you've got one end of the scale, you've got Sweden, which is very liberal to the pandemic. At the other end, you've got New Zealand that completely closed its borders, right? Different ways of, and they both want the same thing, which is to get rid of the COVID virus, which is to maintain a healthy population, right? Both want the same thing, different ways of doing it. So I think we look back at the pandemic and see lots of positives, not just negatives.
Not just negatives, yeah. And I wanted, very quickly, I wanted to get your opinion on media consumption as it, you know, when it comes to developing a global mindset, because I had this incident when I was working at the media center in my university, where I wanted to do a story on Brexit in the UK. And I kind of had to fight to do it because it was something that was not based in the United States. And I'm not throwing shade at them at all, but it was surprising to me that I had to really make a case to cover a global story, which I felt was very important, especially when it comes to the global economy. It really made me aware that media consumption also plays a big role when it comes to shaping our minds about, you know, our identity. Because if you're watching news that is totally focused on just the country that you live in versus watching an international news like CNN or BBC, you know, because I come from a journalistic background, I think, you know, this is something that I would really like to bring to people's attention to, you know, watch international news, read international newspapers or news websites.
Well, again, I mean, you know, on the one hand, we are a global society, and on the other, we are just little villages in our little villages, aren't we?
And yes, we are.
If we can't see the direct connection to our lives, it becomes kind of not as interesting, not relevant. That's why we'll gladly open our news apps and check a story on a local car accident or even a big car accident in another country because, you know, oh, that could happen to me. But Brexit, that's that British EU thing. I live in the States. It's got nothing to do with me. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult to see the connection. And perhaps that's like what the global mindset is as well, that you see the connections, that you see that today we are all interconnected. You know, I mean, just a simple example, the idea that while Chinese-American relationships are filled with tension, China has so many investments in the US and the US has so many investments, emotional and physical, in China, that it would be almost impossible for them to really split. Do you see what I mean? They're so interconnected with one another. And if people only just understood that, right, then media would become more relevant and more interesting. But I think also Brexit was really confusing.
It was.
And really oversimplified for many people. And people are looking back on Brexit I think it was a terrible thing to leave. Whether they're right or not, the leavers, the world is an interconnected place. And the minute you disconnect from the world, you're disconnecting from the problem. So it'd be interesting to see how it pans out. Again, the pandemic, you had all the leavers saying, told you so, because they got their vaccines first and they vaccinated the fastest and all that stuff. So they were all saying, told you so. Great, great marketing for the leavers. And I understand why they left. At the time, they were, I think, given an unnuanced picture of the Brexit dilemma. So, you know, people in the end will follow and read things they feel directly affect them. And if they can't see the connection, they won't follow it. So that's what the global mindset is too, is seeing the connections.
Seeing that connection, right?
Mm.
Okay, Pellegrino, that brings us to the end of our conversation.
Oh, wow, you've done it already, God.
Yes, we've done it. It's time just flew by, didn't it?
I hope I've given you some useful stuff.
You know,
I
you have absolutely a did.
Blabber away. And,
yeah. No, it was filled with gems. Thank you so much. It's been a true pleasure. And thank you for all that you're doing to promote cultural awareness. We need more people like you out there.
Thank you so much. That's really kind of you to say. And I'm actually writing a book, not about cultures. But
yes,
I'm
tell us about it. Let's tell us about it. Yes.
Well, it's actually being published by an American publisher. Mm-hmm. The book is about being a man in today's world. I've gone there. But really what the book is about what it's like to be a human being today. That's what I've really done. I've kind of taken all my learnings over the past few years and tried to put them into a story. A personal story, which I hope resonates with lots of readers. So maybe we can come back and do this next year when the book comes out. I'm hoping to have it published in February. They told me that February will be the publishing month.
Okay.
The book is a kind of an attempt that the overall attempt is to get people to talk together more, to create dialogues again, in this case, between men and women. So, you know, maybe that's something we could do next year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll keep that in mind. That does sound very interesting. And I also want to quickly mention your website, you know, for anyone who's interested in learning more about you and watching your fabulous TED Talks. I know you have two of them. They can visit your website, pellegrino-ricardi.com. As usual, you'll find the direct link in the description.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.